since or from the second half of the 19th century to the early 20th century, there was a lot of new Chinese terms created to translate Western terms or concepts. And then, yeah, for example, I would like to pronounce it in Cantonese, my mother tongue, right? Sorry. 美好. Gao yok. Ngai sot. Gay ngai yun. Mei yok. Ngai sot gao yok. Okay, now I would like to concentrate. First of all, I would like to say something about the word yi. And according to the dictionary, the Kangxi Dictionary, which was published in 1716, and it is named after the emperor's era name. And the character yi have different meaning. And it means skill, talent, craft, limit, bound, and to plant. And in addition, it also means arts. Okay. Now I would like to talk about the Liu Yi, six arts. Actually, in ancient China, this is around 1122 to 256 BC, Liu Yi formed the basic of education. And then Confucius required his students to master six arts. And what are these six arts? They are Li, rhymes. Ye, music. Now I'm speaking in Mandarin. Okay. And then Xue, archery. Yu, charioteering. Shu. Shu means writing, learning the characters, and writing essays. It also means studying the six categories of Chinese character. Because for the Chinese character, it was built. You can classify them into six groups, six type of word building. And then shu, the last one, shu. Here the translation is mathematic. However, according to the Guangya, an early 3rd century EC Chinese dictionary, shu means techniques, methods, and skills. The six arts incorporate with military and civil components. The civil side was later associated with the four arts. Qin playing, chess, calligraphy, and painting. There is an overlap between the four arts and the six arts. Here the Qin epitomized music. The chess related to the military strategy, while calligraphy dealt with the aesthetic of writing and the character of cultivation. Is Qin. He is Qi. Chess. This Su calligraphy. This is Hua painting. For the late imperial time, the four arts was more a leisure characteristic. The four arts associated with artistic cultivation and lofty aspiration. They were the main academic and artistic accomplishment required of the aristocratic ancient Chinese scholar. And then here I would like to show you four hanging scores by an anonymous artist. And the painting shows scholar engaged in the pursuit of elegant activities, which associate with the qin playing, the chess, calligraphy, and paintings by the scholars. The anonymous artists were here distribute lofty, elegant gatherings in various garden settings, under tall pine, willow, and locust trees as marbles, and in the background. The scholars are shown in such leisurely pursuits as the burning of incense, playing chess, opening texts, and appreciating a painting. All four scores featured the brushwork and vivid coloring. The main figure, which with identified countenance, appeared in a variety of poses with differences in their statues clearly evident. The drapery lines were rendered using fine yet strong and fluid nailed head red tail strokes. In addition to lake rocks and planters spread throughout the garden setting, there are also such furnishings in daily life as the day bed, an armrest table, large table, drum stool, painting screen, porcelain and bronze, and objects of the scholar's studio. All were carefully painted from life, revealing the classic style of the main court academy of painting. Judging from the objects depicted, this set of painting probably dated back to the middle to late Ming Dynasty, and it is about 16th century. Okay, now we'd like to talk about the art education in China. Okay, the art education in general school. And according to Jiang Danshu is actually a very famous Chinese art educator and one of the first graduate students of the first art and handicraft school found in China. And then he had gave an account of the situation of art education in traditional Chinese education. And according to him, in the past, the Chinese scholar or gentry who loved painting learned it by being self-taught during their spare time. They usually copied old huapu, that is book on the art of drawing or book of model paintings or masterpieces. As well, private tuition or and apprenticeship was also a common means of learning painting in traditional Chinese art education. Private tuition in painting was normally given by one teacher, and the student learned the thinking, conduct, and ways of expressing of his teacher. He should copy the artwork of the teacher or the one assigned by him. There was no clear system of teaching and curriculum. Jiang Danshu also said that the gentry became artists as well as scholars, while the common people might become artisan painters. As a conclusion, art education did not hold a position in Chinese school education before the 20th century. And Jiang Danshu said that there was only one curriculum in the being implemented in education, because for us the school are called the education in China before the 20th century it means education or something like that. And then in this kind of education, how could drawing, handiwork, and music be taken into consideration? This model of education was the same in every corner of China, from Heilongjiang in the very north to Hailan Dao in the very south. And it was not only within but also beyond these 100 years. Okay, we'd like to say that after the turn of the 20th century, in 1902, there is an issue of the of an imperial order on school regulation, and this means a watershed for the development of Chinese art education, because it was the first time that art education was being included in general school education. And in this regulation, for example, in the Tianjin Xiaoxue Zhangcheng Imperial Regulation for Primary School, drawing was one of the 11 subjects for higher primary school. Students learned how to draw simple forms in the first year, and then how to draw models in the second and third year. And for the other. And for the other regulation for the secondary school, drawing was included in the 12 subjects. Students copied landscape drawings in the first year and then made geometric drawings from the second to fourth years. And 1 year later, another imperial regulation for school education were issued. After the overthrow of Qing regime, there were altogether 7 curriculum guides issued from 1912 to 1948. The 1923 curriculum guides provide a foundation for the curriculum in later years, or the issue and implementation of the 1923 curriculum guides had advanced the future development of Chinese art education. The Chinese names for both art and craft subjects in primary school had been changed 3 times. 美术, fine art, and 劳作, labor, was the term used in many curriculum guides. The changing of name reflects changing of objectives or and contents for the two art education subjects in the first half of 20th century. After Tuhua, drawing was replaced by Xingxiang Yishu, formatic art, and Shougong, handwork, by Gongyi, practical art, in the 1923 curriculum guides, the content of the subject expanded. According to Yao Jiadong, an art educator at the time mentioned, the main reason for changing the subject names was the desire to get a more appropriate name for the two subjects. In fact, this changing of name did reflect the Chinese art educator's understanding or expectation of the two subjects, and this was demonstrated in their arguments about replacing the term 图画, drawing, with 美术, fine art, or whether with 美术 or with 形象艺术, formatic art. Besides, the changing of name also means the realization of the zeitgeist, learning from the West, as evidenced by the suggestion to copy American practice of naming the two art subjects, while the Chinese art educator were looking for new names to replace 图画, drawing, and 手工, handwork. In addition to this, the adoption of the child-centered approach and the emphasis on art appreciation in the 1923 curriculum also demonstrated the Chinese intellectual's wishes, using Yu Jianhua's words, to keep the pace with the West at that time. Ironically, in contrast to learning from the West, there was a neglect of Chinese cultural tradition, such as visual arts, aesthetic education, or visual art education in official curriculum guides. Though art appreciation had become one of the important components of art education after the 1923 curriculum guides appeared, it was not until the 1948 curriculum guides that the idea of guiding the children to understand and appreciate Chinese art was first announced. In his article, Yu Jianhua was critical that though Chinese painting had a long history and good quality, it was being ignored in schools and official curriculum guides. Considering that the entire Chinese school curriculum was copied from the West, Yu was critical of the fact that the curriculum guide seemed to be designed not for Chinese, but for Europe European and American. 美玉美育 Aesthetic Education 艺术教育 Art Education 美术教育 Fine Art Education and 图画教育 Drawing Education were the new terms and new concepts in the first half of 20th century China. They were all imported from the West. In my research, for the Chinese writing on art education, I found that 美育 was the first Chinese term usedto introduce Western aesthetic education and, or art education. And 艺术教育 was the second, 美术教育 was the third. And then now in this part of the story, I would like to focus on the term 艺术教育, this one.Okay, in 1923, another famous Chinese art educator and artist, Liu Haishu, he said that the history of 艺术教育, art education, in the West has, was long. The West had a long history of an art education. On the contrary, it was new in China. This indicates that the fact that the conceptArt education is new to China, and the term 艺术教育 is therefore a new Chinese term for translating this concept. This study found that the first Chinese writing introducing the term 艺术教育 was Xuan Wu's translation. The original writing, or the original title of the writing is Principle of Art Education. And Shen would say that the original author of the article was a psychology teacher at the University of Harbiden. It's written in Chinese, and I don't know what it's in English. Maybe he's Harbiden, maybe Harvard or something like that. Yeah. Okay.And then,
Harvard University.
I need to check it out, okay. And then, this indicates that the Chinese term 艺术教育 is used to translate the English term art education. And then here you can see that Zhong Liang Huan, another author or Chinese art educator at that time, he has also written an article. And then he said that 艺术教育 in English was aesthetic education. And then for Feng Jikai, he also made and translate a Japanese study. And then in this translation, it stated that 艺术教育 in German was Kunstlerische.Or Kunsterziehung, or Künstlerische Erziehung, or Bildung. Okay, and this indicated maybe the reference source of this article is from German literature. Okay.And then for one of the author, Tian Min, the other name of 艺术教育 was 美育. And Zhong Liang Huan also claimed that 艺术教育 in English was aesthetic education. And here you can say that there's a mix up between art education and aesthetic education. And then both Tian Min and Zhong Liang Huan did not provide any further explanation on this issue. According to Liu Haishu, 艺术教育 was 美的教育, education of beauty, or 美育, aesthetic education.And Lu Qiqing also equated 艺术教育 to 美育, city education. He explained sketchily that 艺术 means a concrete expression of beauty feelings, and 教育 was life. Put the two terms together, they denote beautiful life, and that was 美育 a city education. For the, about the group, the scope of the of art education, there are for some artists or some art educator, they suggest that Chinese literature, history, drawing, singing, handiwork, and physical exercise were the subjects which were means to realize the objectives of 艺术教育. And then for Feng Jikai, he said that the scope of 艺术教育 was extensive, and it was not possible for drawing and music lessons to fulfill this criteria. In other words, 艺术教育 covered a wide range of areas, which include every meal, every grass and trees, and every movement. And 艺术教育 at school means the entire education and should be integrated into every subject. For the other two offers, the scope of... it was in the early 20s, should be 1930s.
Okay,
thank you. Okay. And then for the other two Chinese scholars or art educators, the scope of 艺术教育 includes not only 美术 fine arts, and music subjects, but also the design of school building, decoration of school, and the personality of the school teacher.Apart from this, there were also Chinese art educators like Lei Jiajun and Wen Jiaotong who find that art education subject simply include drawing, handiwork, and music, nothing else. Okay. Okay, my research finds over 500 pieces of publication of art education in the early 20th century. 78 were books,and the others were articles. It was a characteristic of the written works of that time that many Western ideas were introduced. Information on the history of Western art education, Western philosophers, Western art educators or artists like Plato, Aristotle, Baumgarten, Schiller, Dewey, Herbert Reed, Zizek, Millet, Courbet, Monet,and Giotto, could easily be found in these written works. And for example, in Wang Guowei's article, which was published in 1903, I think, okay. And in his article, he argued that a complete education should include physical education, intellectual education, and moral education, and aesthetic education. And he cited Confucius and two Western scholars. One of them can be identified as Schiller,and the other one should be Schelling.
Schelling,
yeah. Because what is given in his text is just the Chinese pronunciation translation. Yeah, the translation in Chinese, just the pronunciation of the word and then translated in Chinese. Yeah, and then, but I try my best to have a counter examination of different articles, and I found that it should be Schelling.Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I think it should be. Yeah. And then besides, okay, a little bit too far. Okay, and besides the neglect of Chinese cultural tradition, in official curriculum guides, there also was He Jingyuan, the then Chinese art educator, noted with disapproval a lack of discussion about the teaching of Chinese painting among the many discussions about primary school art education in his time. In short, an overwhelming number of Western ideas were appropriated during the process of building up Chinese art education. This includes the rationales as well as idea about objectives, content, teaching methods, and assessment for art education.In this sense, the development of Chinese art education was westernized. And in his book, 小学美术教学的研究 Study of Art Teaching in Primary School, which is published in published in 1934. Yu criticized the way of the Chinese art educators learned from the West. In the past, our country's drawing section in primary school followed the trend of international educational thought and joined the mission towards utilitarianism. Recently, the Education Ministry has set three objectives of primary school art lessons. First, to arouse the children's interest in studying art by conforming to their natural fondness for beauty. Second, enable the children to reach a higher standard of appreciating and recognizing beauty, and foster their ability to create beauty. Third, assist the children in learning the principle of art and applying the knowledge to their lives. The content of these objectives is similar to those being emphasized in Europe, America, and Japan. These are the respect of children's character and cultivating children's personality through art. He said, the other walks, we walk. The others run, we also run. We would not be able to show any result if we use the slogan plagiarized from others to replace our signboard. Okay, here, maybe we would like to ask why. Why art education was being under the influence of the West? Why? Yeah, it's also my question. Okay. Yeah, and Zhong Baihua is a very famous scholar and ethician. He said that, China has her own unique culture. Why should we be so keen on learning from the West? Historically, China possessed a unique tradition of art practice, art criticism, and art education. This cultural tradition means rich resources and references are available to inform the construction of an ideological and practical framework for art education in contemporary China, and I believe should have a direct bearing on the development of Chinese art education. In my study, however, I found that there was, in fact, a grand debate about the issue of westernization in early 20th century China. Yeah, this problem is actually a big issue in China at that time, and there was many, many arguments about this problem, westernization. And then, now, I would like to invite you to my storytelling section, because here, there are a lot of arguments from the scholar and artist in that area. And I have been in 15 papers. Each of them has one argument. And I would like to whisper to you, and when I call the number, please read out the text, okay?
From the scholars of the time and other areas.
Here are the arguments. The debate. Yeah. Okay. a cultural debate, westernization. Should China be westernized? Should westernization be embedded in China? And first of all, there's a discussion about westernization in general aspects. Okay, number one.
Oh,
yeah.
From Fu Xi, from 1930, from a word that's called Introduction to My Thoughts. I won't read the title here. And he or she said, not only material and machinery are inferior to the other, but political system, morality, literature, music, fine art, and physical stature are inferior to the other as well.
One of the arguments. Okay. Yeah. And then number two.
Chen Jingshu.
Yeah. Chen Jingshu, yeah.
First, the European modern culture was indeed much more advanced than the Chinese culture. Second, the modern Western culture, whether we like it or not, is the trend of the contemporary world.
Okay. Now, number three.
Liang Qichao, a record of impressions on traveling in Europe. Those who praised the omnipotence of science had hoped previously that as soon as science succeeded, the golden age would appear forthwith. Now science is successful indeed. Material progress in the West in the last 100 years has greatly surpassed the achievements of the 3,000 years prior to this period. Yet we human beings have not secured happiness. On the contrary, science gives us catastrophes. We are like travelers losing their way in a desert. They see a big black shadow ahead and desperately run to it, thinking that it may lead them somewhere. But after running a long way, they no longer see the shadow and fall into the slough of the sponge. What is that shadow? It is Mr. Science.
Okay, and then now, number four.
There are two groups of people. The first group had become disdainful of their ancestors and taken over without compunction and dispute the current official philosophy of the West at its face value, with democracy and science and efficiency and progress as its chief ingredient. Mr. Nathaniel Pfeffer, in a recent article in Harper's, spoke of a Chinese who would tear down the beautiful old shrines and residences around the famous West Lake, China's national garden, unrivaled in historical and artistic associations, and put up in their place New Jersey factory buildings. He and his kind are now omnipresent in factories, in banking houses, in government offices, and in academic halls, and the whole Chinese atmosphere is resonant with their plans for development.
Okay, now come to number five.
Mei Guangdi, the second. The second group of men are vigorously employed in effecting not only particular political and social reforms, but a total cultural revolution. Chiefly under the leadership of such clever and up-to-date minute modernists as Dr. Hu Xi, they're working towards such an uncompromising westernization of Chinese life and thought that is in danger of proving itself not a Chinese renaissance, as it is often claimed to be, but a Chinese suicide.
Okay, and numbers six, right?
Mm-hmm. Mei Guangdi. Confucius has been the fountainhead of which virtually all the intellectual and spiritual streams for 25 centuries and so, and he is still the paramount influence among millions of Chinese, whether they are conscious of it or not, despite the work of the anti-Confucian modernists who just now have the cry.
Okay, and then number seven.
Mei Guangdi. No one seems more willing than the editors of the Critical Review to admit to admit that their cultural tradition, which has suffered from a narrow self-sufficiency through its long geographical isolation and its consequent lack of the advantages of comparison and competition, must need be enriched, supplemented, and in the case of its aberrations, rectified. And its present contact, certainly the most significant in its historical career with Western culture, should afford it a welcome opportunity for expansion and self-improvement, but not for self-annihilation, as some of its modernist enemies wish.
Okay, stop for a moment. Just now we have heard about the argument among the Chinese intellectuals, the debate about Westernization in general effort. And then now I will come to, because my topic is art education, and of course I would like to talk about art education, but however I find that there's not much debate like in the other topics about art education, because maybe art education is very new for China, okay. But however, there's a debate about Westernization of Chinese painting. There's a debate about this. And then now I then come to the second section, Westernization of Chinese painting. Okay, now I would like to you have number 8.
Yeah. The Westerns are skilled in geometry, and consequently there is not the slightest mistake of their way of rendering light and shade and distance near and far. In their paintings, all the figures, buildings and trees cast shadows, and their brush and colors are entirely different from those of Chinese painters. Their views, scenery, stretch out from broad in the foreground and narrow in the background, and there are and are defined mathematically measured. When they paint houses on a wall, people are tempted to walk into them. Students of painting may well take over one or two points from them to make their own paintings more attractive to the eye. But their paintings are entirely lacking of brushwork. Even though the pictures are perfectly painted, it is simply a kind of craftsmanship, and cannot consequently be classified as art.
Okay, thank you. And in this text, actually, Zhou Yigui, he was a court painter, in the Qing Dynasty, right? And then has pointed out that the most striking features of Western painting is the employment of geometric perspective and shading to depict images, thus making the image possess qualities of actuality. Zhou had also compared Western paintings to Chinese painting. The statement that their paintings are entirely lacking of brushwork, even though the pictures are perfectly painted, it is simply a kind of craftsmanship. Jiang, okay, for us it's craftsmanship, a craftsman, and cannot be consequently be classified as art. Reveals the characteristic of Chinese painting, where brushwork plays a very important role in Chinese painting, and it is so important that it becomes one of the critical criteria for judging whether a piece of work can be classified as art in China. Furthermore, this statement also clearly reveals that the Chinese intellectual or painters before the 20th century actually belittled the quality of actuality, and even though they were attracted by this painting technique, they found it was merely a kind of craftsmanship, and the artists who were good at this were archers. For the Qing emperor, especially Emperor Qianlong, they found that the chiaroscuro, the contrast of light technique of oil paintings, was not attractive and demand that the missionary court painters create a new style that combines Western and Chinese style, Chinese painting technique. And this one is by one of the very famous missionary court painters. And he's just his picture is actually a collaboration between him and the Chinese court painter. Okay. And then here I would like to talk about the Chinese artist's attitude towards Western visual arts after the turn of the century. And then now I would like to have number nine.
Number nine,
yeah.
From Chen Shuren. No art can fail to be influenced by its time. Painting is not an exception. Now that the material and spiritual civilization of the East is entirely dependent on the West, how is it possible to maintain an isolationist policy in art? Unless we in the Orient do not wish to spread Oriental painting in glory, but if we do, it would be poor judgment not to adopt the Western way of training as foundation. It is wrong to accuse anyone using oil paint and watercolors of imitating Western painting. If we hope to express our emotions, we have to use Western colors and techniques. It is a well-known fact to anyone acquainted with painting that Oriental colors are inadequate. Yeah, inadequate.
Okay. Now I would like to have number 10.
Number 10. Yeah. And Chen Duxiu. Every artist in the Qing dynasty used the four important skills: Ling, copy, Mo, trans, Fang, imitate, and Bu, play, to copy old masterpieces. There are hardly any new and independent creation of these painters.
Okay, now number 11.
Yui Hai Su, my days in Paris. A great part is spent on visiting museums and galleries. From Giotto to Botticelli, from Tizian to Fragano, from Poussin to David, from Ingres to Cezanne, I walk from the Spanish gallery in the Louvre to where the Netherlandish artists are exhibited. After visiting the Louvre, I even go straight to the Luxembourg Palace to look at the modern paintings. Every time I visit several galleries, inevitably I feel an infinite change in my heart. Sometimes I feel lost, other times I feel enlightened. This is very meaningful.
Thank you. And number 12.
Wu Yifeng. Western painting has been developing at a tremendous pace. Numerous art schools like Naturalism, Impressionism, Post-Impressionism, Cubism, and Futurism appeared within 200 or 300 years. On the contrary, Chinese painting is still very conservative. Even naturalism has not been reached in the present development of Chinese painting. What is the use of talking about impressionism, cubism, or futurism?
Okay, number 13.
Lin Shu. As new learning became flourishing, most young people studied art abroad. The Chinese traditional painting was thus abandoned as straw dogs.
Okay, number 14.
Jin Cheng. Chinese painting, having 1,000 years of history, achieves splendid results and commands admiration from the whole world. However, there are ignorant people who have no idea about preserving and carrying forward the quintessence of Chinese culture, but talk brazenly about reforming Chinese art and being art renegades. Don't they feel ashamed when they reflect in the midnight?
Okay, and number 15.
Liu Yizhong. A horrifying phenomenon in the world of literature and arts in China is now the importation of an ism, but without introducing the meaning of the ism. As a result, everyone uses his own interpretation. When he reads a work mainly on the author himself, he calls that expressionism. If it concerns other people more, then it is realism. To be moved by a girl's exposed legs to write is to write poetry.
To write poetry is romanticism, but to look at a girl's legs and not be allowed to write poetry is called classism. A head falls down from the sky. On this head stands a cow. Oh, love such is futurism, etc., etc.
Yeah, and all these are the arguments here among the Chinese painters or scholars. Okay? And then, actually, besides the argument about westernization and traditionalism, there's also a suggestion to create new Chinese visual arts through simulating Chinese and Western visual arts, like Cai Yuanpei. Cai Yuanpei was a very, very important or influential figure in Chinese art education in the early Chinese century. Yeah, and then he said that it was the era of stimulating Eastern and Western culture. The formula to merge Chinese and Western visual culture was to adopt the stronger points, that is always the hope of the Chinese, the stronger point of Western visual culture or visual art, that is the scientific technology, scientific techniques of Western painting, the one that the Chinese artists did to during the Qing dynasty, okay, into Chinese painting. And then for Yi Jianhua, he was also a very famous art historian in the early 20th century. He said that everything related to composition and perspective should be borrowed from the West. Again, the actuality, this character is very valued by the Chinese from the West. Brushwork and color work should be from China. And then in the case of simulating Eastern and Western culture, there are two famous artists. One of them is Lin Fengmian, and the other one is Xu Beihong. They were the representatives who put their theory into practice. This work is from Lin Fengmian. Actually, he studied visual art in France in 1919 or 1920. Okay, in France. And then this one, and the other one is Xu Beihong. Yeah, the fame of these two artists are totally different. While Xu Beihong has enjoyed a very high status in China after 1949, Lin Fengmian's life was very, very sad after 1949 because of the communist regime. They didn't like his style of painting. Okay. Again, why? Why there are so many debates? Why there are so many arguments among the Chinese intellectual during the early 20th century? Because it's really a big issue. I can find tons of works, of books and or articles on the argument of westernization, total westernization even. Total westernization and also traditionalism. Yeah, there are many Chinese scholars or artists. They even try very hard to defend the value of Chinese traditional culture. Is it sad? Isn't it sad? Yeah, the Chinese have to defend their own traditional culture. Yeah, it's quite sad, right? Okay, why? Western aggression. Okay, here I would like is about war, okay, about fighting, okay. And In addition to the huge amount of indemnity involved, China also had to cede territory to the Western powers. Examples include the ceding of Hong Kong to Britain in the Treaty of Nanjing, Kowloon Peninsula to Britain again in the Anglo-Chinese Treaty of Tianjin, ceding the maritime province between the Ussuri and the Pacific to Russia in the Sino-Russian Treaty of Peking, and Taiwan to Japan in the Treaty of Shimonoseki. From the 1870s to 1910, China was divided into six spheres of influence, zones in which Germany took Shandong province, Russia took eastern China, Britain the Yangtze River basin, Japan Fujian province, and France the southern western Chinese province, bordering to French Indochina. These spheres of influence in China, as John King Fairbank and Edwin Reishauer explained, was created when the demands and seizures of concessions by these great powers were legalized by treaties with China, usually through 99 years lease. China thus came to suffer a semi-colonial status. A further humiliation for the Chinese was the Russo-Japanese War of 1904 to 1905, which took place not in Russia or Japan, but in China. Okay? And then the result is that Chinese, in rival imperialist power, including an Asian state conquering Northeast China and Korea. Obviously, China was not able to resist foreign aggression and was humiliated by being put into a semi-colonial status after being a unified country for over 2,000 years. This damaged the Chinese psyche and caused further degradation for many Chinese who had for many centuries been told to consider this power, I'm sorry, as barbarian. Yeah.
Sorry? What is it?
And they have been told for 1,000 years that the Western people are barbarian. Yeah, okay. And then this forced a lot of soul searching and led many to seek a transition to a new way forward for the entire Chinese society at that time. During the quest for modernization, as Yu Yingshi explains, Chinese intellectuals in the Neicheng or Republic of China era was not able to look at, experience, or appreciate the Western culture with a clear, calm, and quiet mind and attitude. Yu states that the relationship between China and the Western country was invader and sufferer, superpower and weak nation. Being under the shadow of Western imperialism, the Chinese intellectuals were desperate for instant success and quick profits from learning from the West. Yu goes further that this kind of feeling or hate in the hearts of the Chinese had obstructed them from finding an effective combination of the Western Chinese culture, of the Western and Chinese culture, even though they wished to do so. He mentioned that the Chinese intellectual who embraced the idea, Zhong Xue Wei Ti, Xi Xue Wei Yong, Chinese learning for fundamental and Western learning for practical application in the Lei Qing, as well as those who advocate a total westernization in the May 4th movement, had made mistakes. They were either parochially arrogant or self-abased. Here, Mei Guangdi had also pointed out in 1930 said that it was amazing how the Chinese have within one generation turned from extreme conservatism to extreme radicalism, just within a generation. End of the story? No. It goes further. Sorry. Do we have time?
Yes.
Okay. Then if we have time, then I will go further. If not, then I can stop here.
No, we have time.
Okay. Okay, end of the story? No. Yeah, here? In 1990, I read an article, which is in the preface of her book, from Lin Manni. She is a scholar in Taiwan. Okay? She voiced her concern about Taiwan keeping pace with other members of the global village without losing its unique qualities. Since absorbing the American creativity art educational theory from the 1940s onwards, the norm of creativity in art education has become common and natural in Taiwan. Following the swings of international art education, ripples in the art educational circle in Taiwan occur. As a result of the development of contemporary society and the coming of the era of information technology, the idea of turning all nations into one global village has become truth now. Isn't it our dream to introduce promptly first-hand information from foreign countries to Taiwan, and thus enable the Taiwanese to be an international member who is keeping the same pace with the world? However, we then encounter another problem. What will be our standing point if we want to enjoy an equal status with other global members? If we always play a passive and receiving role, what we will become is only a second colony of the culture of other countries. Actually, it is not only the problem of art education, but of other area as well. Okay, in 1996 is my part of experience. Yeah, in 1996, I graduated from University of Munich, and then returned to Hong Kong. And then one day I met a friend, and then we have this discussion about art education. And then during the discussion, she asked me, she talked about DBAE. I said, what's it? DBAE? She was very, very astonished. What? You never heard about DBAE? And this expression haunts in my mind until now because I felt very, very scared. Why? I claim that I'm studying art education in Germany. But how come I don't know DBAE? Okay. And DBAE actually, okay. What is DBAE? DBAE, the full name is Discipline-Based Art Education. Discipline-Based Art Education. It was an art educational model promoted by the Getty Center for Education in the Art in the USA. Okay. Huh. Yeah, it's really, for me, until now, I still find it very difficult to understand why it is important for a Chinese art educator, I claim myself an art educator, to have the knowledge of an art education program promoted by a group of American art education advocates, especially as this program was designed to respond to an American context. And significantly, I have never heard about, I'm sorry, I am very hardworking doing my study in Germany. However, I really had never heard about DBAE in any lectures. It's the fault of my lecturer, of my professor, not mine. Okay, they didn't mention DBAE during the lectures. And then I also haven't read anything about DBAE in the books or journal concerning art education in Germany. Yeah. Okay, however, as I later read books or magazines about art education published in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and mainland China during the period from the late 1980s to the middle of 1990s, I found that DBAE was really a key topic. Yeah. In mainland China, a series of books published by the Getty Center were translated into Chinese in the 1990s. In Taiwan, DBAE was introduced in a large number of articles or books. And the reputation of DBAE in the Hong Kong art education circles was evidenced in the newsletter published by Hong Kong Society for Education in Art during this period. That's why she's so surprised to learn that I never heard about DBAE. Yeah. And that means I'm so Okay, and then 2000, an artist, A Xian, Liu Jixian, he talked about the situation of visual art, trans visual art. As a result of what seems like a tidal wave of Western influence, a false light had developed in Chinese culture, wiping out what had been a more or less orderly progression. Apart from some recognized historical vestige, architecture, such as the Forbidden City or the courtyard are not used for development anymore, traditional brush ink painting is becoming folk art line. Audience for Peking opera diminish. There is no new development in the ceramic field in either an artistic or technical sense. Instead of varying and progressing our culture, concrete skyscrapers are constructed. Artists seek opportunities to participate in major international art events by showing international style artwork. People enjoy seeing Hollywood movies or sitting in a pub to drink brandy or coffee. How to continue the story? Maybe we all have a role to continue the story. Okay, that's the end of my storytelling. Thank you.